Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. I am one of your hosts, Steve Roscoe, and I'm sitting here with two of my best friends. Hello, guys.
Aw, what a nice guy.
How are you guys doing tonight?
You don't have to sugarcoat it.
Yeah, we have an interesting show tonight. With Steve is Peter Leonard and myself, Rich Nicodem, and we have got a very interesting show as we are using some new technology to teleconference and everything. So we're really not sitting next to Steve. We're next to him in spirit, just not bodies.
Basically, it's so cold out tonight, none of us wanted to leave our house, so we're all Skyping in from different locations.
Yeah, why the heck would I want to leave my house in minus 25 degree weather?
No, I'm glad to be doing it right here from my den.
There you go.
And I do apologize for no music or background effects, because as usual, guess who doesn't know how to set the board up?
We will get that settled soon enough.
I swear it's just me. I swear.
This is the stripped-down version of Paranormal Radio, so this is no bells, no whistles, there's no makeup on, we're not sitting around a table communicating. This is going to be an interesting show tonight, so, but however, I think we've got some really interesting material to share, so.
Yes, we do. Who wants to go first?
Well, you know what? I'll lead us off, if you don't mind. There's a couple of nice hot topics going on in the news today. First of all, did you know that a Bigfoot hunter claimed to have actually killed Bigfoot? And, my friends, he has proof.
I've seen that.
You might want to sign him because he's looking to do conventions and stuff.
Well, yeah, I would imagine he would. At first, I was a little concerned when I saw the photo online. It kind of looked like my ex-wife, but then as I took a closer look at it, she has a little bit more hair on the face than Bigfoot does. But according to this gentleman here who actually shot Bigfoot in a wooded area of California near Loop 1604 and Highway 151 back in September 2012, not really sure why he kind of let us all know now, not back in September 2012 when he actually shot Bigfoot. But according to this, Bigfoot is 100% real. As I've been saying all these years, guys, Bigfoot's out there. And according to Rick Dyer, he finally shot him. And you know how he baited Bigfoot? You're going to love this.
Pork ribs or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. He got ribs from Walmart, all places, to bait Bigfoot. And then he shot and killed him. Poor Bigfoot. So now he plans on taking this body across country in North America, where he's going to charge a fee to view the body. Guys, this guy is pretty questionable, and he's kind of sketchy from everything that I've read online. And he was involved in a little bit of a Bigfoot ordeal back around 2008, where he claimed to have Bigfoot. So I'm not so sure that this is real. I mean, the guy says he's got the DNA tests. He did 3D optical scans, body scans, and it's Bigfoot. So what do you guys think?
I got a question for you. Isn't it in some states or some countries that it's illegal to shoot Bigfoot and you can get arrested for that?
I don't know, but according looking at this picture, it's almost like shooting a hairy guy. It could almost be considered murder.
I seen that picture, and I read some of the article, and I'm sitting there thinking, you know, come on, this can't be real. Because like you said, the Bigfoot or whatever it is looks just like you and I almost.
It kind of looks like Harry and the Hendersons Bigfoot, if you ever remember seeing that movie. Back in, geez, I don't know, we're going back into the maybe the 80s or the 90s here. And all I know is that, you know, since he's got all this publicity surrounding it and he's made the claim, now he's just got to come up with the proof. So I'm waiting to see the next story that gets published. And this is stuff that's actually not only on, like, you know, like the Huffington Post, but it's actually on, like, FoxNews.com and, you know, ABC.com. Actual, you know, trustworthy news sources actually publishing this. I think they all think it's a big hoax, but again, it's there.
I'm not sure. I'm, you know, as far as Bigfoot is concerned, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Do I have proof he exists? No. Is there a possibility he exists? Absolutely. You'd have to be a fool not to at least say there's a possibility that Bigfoot exists.
Well, if he does exist, he's definitely the hide-and-seek champion of the world. Because,
oh, absolutely.
I mean, this creature has intelligence that surpasses anything that I know that's not human, because if this thing can detect human, you know, actual video footage and finding where he sleeps, finding his scat on the ground, anything but just a few footprints, I mean, Bigfoot's doing something right here.
Oh, absolutely.
So as much as I want Bigfoot to be real, and I really do believe there's something out there because there's a lot of credible witnesses, I just not really sure I think that this guy is a credible witness.
Well, we'll have to find out. I think in the next few months it'll come to full light here whether he is telling the truth or whether he's trying to pull a hoax.
Well,
they
you
do
know
have
what?
A TV show called Finding Bigfoot, so he must be real.
Well, you know what? They're still trying to find Bigfoot on the TV show. You think he would have made an appearance for his public? He could be a celebrity. Think of all the money Bigfoot could make if he actually showed up on the TV show.
Just in Razor commercials alone.
you know, that too. He could actually join the Finding Bigfoot team with Moneymaker and Bobo, and they could go find Nessie. And he could be one of the guys out there helping to find. And then they could get Nessie, and they could gang up and try to find aliens and have another show. So, I mean, come on, there's some money to be made here, Bigfoot. What are you waiting for? Come out of hiding.
I know, you're Harry. The Germans must love you.
Yeah. Well, that's the news for the Bigfoot front. I know it's, I still consider it paranormal. I'm just absolutely fascinated with Bigfoot. And again, you know, I always want to add something to Bigfoot each show. And I could not resist this, guys, when there's somebody claiming they've actually killed Bigfoot.
Oh, absolutely.
One of these days, we'll get up there and look for him in Whitehall. Something's got to be up there.
Yeah, well,
maybe he hangs out with the elusive Black Panther. Or is it Pink yes. Panther? No, it's Black Panther.
I think it's Black Panther, yeah.
Yeah, Black Panther is a Marvel Comics superhero from Wakanda, someplace like that. So he just relocated up to Whitehall. That's just been a few years ago, so...
Although I do have to tell you, if we're going to go Bigfoot hunting, you might have to keep the ribs away from Steve. I've been to barbecue places with Steve. Those ribs won't make it out there.
Don't be eating our Bigfoot bait now, Steve.
I'm a huge rib fan. Pete and Candy both know that I'm a rib aficionado. I enjoy dim ribs.
Well, I think we ought to bring some Burger King
Steve,
Romeo
burgers
too.
They put a plate of ribs down in front of him, and he ate that stuff like he was going to the chair.
Yes, that's what Candy said, right? And it caught my attention long enough to make me chuckle, then go right back to eating.
I don't blame you. Those were good ribs.
Yes, they were.
Ribs are great, but
so
they're just so messy.
For Bigfoot hunting. Ribs, a cooler, beef sticks. Wonder if he likes Skittles.
Well, I don't know. If we're going Bigfoot hunting, I'm bringing a bottle of Jack Daniels with me. So,
you drink enough of that, you will be seeing Bigfoot and his whole family.
There you go.
I'll bring that 60 caliber black powder rifle, too, just in case.
That sounds good, too, Pete.
So, Steve, what do we have on the investigation front? I know we've been keeping you busy.
Well, we've got a few things. I'll be making a few calls in the next day or two to get everything settled. I want to know what everybody's schedule is so I can go ahead and make all these appointments and arrangements. We've got a few in Utica. We have to go to a consultation. Without giving the name away, is one of our retailers here has called us and wants us to come and investigate one of their buildings. So I'll be calling him this week. We have got gas fill to do. We've got a few other things we were going to be doing. So be ready, guys. I will let you know just as soon as you guys let me know what your schedule is so I can set these appointments up.
Well, you know me. I'm on board for all it, whatever you need me for, so.
I'm figuring you and me and Mr. Leonard here can go to the Utica store consultation sometime, if not this week, next week.
Sounds good to me.
All right.
Now let's talk a little bit about the last investigation.
Last weekend we did an investigation. They all blur together to me at this point. Or was it 2 weeks ago?
Say that again, Pete. I'm sorry.
When did we just do an investigation? Was it 2 weeks ago or last weekend?
It's 2 weeks ago.
It has to be 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks. That was interesting. If you guys don't mind, I want to take a second with this.
Absolutely.
When Steve bought his Frank's box, they gave him a complimentary pair of the devil's rods, or dowsing rods, whatever you want to call them. And basically, we've just kicked those things around for a year. Nobody ever really wanted to touch them or try anything out with them. And since this wasn't really a private residence, I decided to take them out just to see what they would do. I mean, I've always had my doubts. You've seen them for centuries. People use them to find water and buried electrical wires and every other thing. It actually spooked me out, and I don't know how you guys felt about this, but it actually spooked me out that I could feel something moving those rods, especially when I asked it to point to where Steve was standing, and both of those rods moved slowly and pointed at Steve. Then I asked it to point to Peter, and it completely turned around and pointed at me. Then at another point during the 5 or 10 minutes that I was using them, they actually crossed and locked as if they were magnetically frozen. I mean, I couldn't pull them apart. That's kind of disturbing to me because I don't know what was moving them.
You know, being there, when it kind of, you asked them to point at me, I kind of looked at you and gave you the, oh, are you doing this kind of look, if you remember, And you assured me, you said, no, I'm not moving these things. And I took one of them, and sure enough, and you can actually could feel like a pull on the end of those things. It was very, very disturbing.
Yeah, it's something I can't explain. You could physically feel it moving. Something was moving it. So there must be something
to it. I didn't use the rods, but I did witness... I did witness when they pointed to Steve when you were saying, who was Steve or where is Steve? And I did witness it when it asked where Pete was and it pointed to you. I never held them, but I can tell you, you were just holding them straight up and they were moving on their own. So I'll back you up on that. I mean, you know, it's kind of like that whole Ouija board thing where essentially, you know, when you're playing Ouija board and you ask a question and you almost feel like somebody's like moving the board to yes or no or to letters, you know, where, you know, you know by basically pressing your hands on it with someone else that it's being moved. I mean, I've actually played with the Ouija board once or twice as, you know, much younger, and I don't recommend people do that. But anywho, going back to the rods, it's kind of like that. You were just holding them straight up, and that you could see them sort of moving around on their own. It was kind of creepy in a way, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it was.
One of our trainees wanted to try them out, and we let her use them. And then at one point, I don't know if you guys heard her, when we were in the basement of this place, she said she could actually feel something pulling on her hair as well while she was using the rods.
Yeah, there's some strong energy in that location. Another weird thing that happened during the investigation towards the end is when we were up on that second floor. And up on the second floor, I had a couple audio recorders going, and I think Pete had his audio recorder, and Steve, you might have had one too as well. But I was with Jen, and now Jen was investigating with us, and this is Jen Cleary, and she's the only female investigator we had actually on this case. During the investigation, I didn't hear this with my own ears. I found this on the audio recorder later, but as you're walking through, and it was getting toward the latter part of the investigation. You guys remember how my wife called, and she said she locked herself out?
Yep.
That the garage door was actually frozen, and she's trying to use the opener, it wouldn't come up, and she wanted me to come home, so I took off and went and let her in the house. But right about then, at that point in time, I remember Jen saying something to me. She goes, "Did someone just say Rich? Did someone just yell Rich?" And I'm like, "I didn't hear anything." And then I pulled my phone out of my pocket because I had it on silence, and I noticed there was a couple missed calls from my wife. So I went, I saw that, and I went downstairs because after three missed calls, I figured there must have been something important. So I called her, and that's when she told me she was locked out. But the really weird part of that whole thing is, without dragging us out further, is that when I went back to the recorder and listened to the audio, I heard a female voice yell my name. It said, "Rich!" And then Jen came on the audio and said, "Did someone just yell Rich? Did you just hear Rich?" And that was the same time, within 10 seconds after she said that, I looked at my phone and I had three missed calls from my wife. And I heard, I picked up the voice yelling my name on the audio recorder, and it was a female voice. Weird.
Wow.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah, the female spirit and the child spirit in that building are quite prominent. You could tell.
Yeah.
That they're both trying to reach out to someone.
Yeah, but it's just so weird. It was almost like when I listened to it, it almost, you know, I mean, after being with, you know, with Kelly for so many years, I kind of recognized her voice. And as I listened to this yell, it almost sounded like her voice. It was just very strange. It sounded different than the other female voices that I captured on audio. And I've got to share that with you guys. I've got a bunch more of audio recordings from the second investigation that I still need to share with the property, people who rent the property there, as well as you guys. But I picked up some stuff out of Frank's box. There was another interesting one in the basement where Pete said something about, "What is the last thing that you remember?" And this is where we're next to that elevator shaft. And the word "falling" came through on the spirit box.
That was interesting. Yeah, I was standing right beside him and Pete and I looked at each other like, wow.
And there's another one where asked the spirit how old it was. And it said, and it was completely, you could hear it and understand it. It said, 30, just like that. Not rushed, 30, just like that. And I was just like, wow. That's probably one of the most clearest EVPs I've ever got out of the Frank's box or spirit box.
Yeah, that was very...
the shadow play down there, too, was amazing.
Yeah, you caught something on your video camera. Did you get a chance to review that on the computer screen?
Yes, I did, and Steve is responsible for that one.
Steve is the shadow figure. See, folks, sometimes we capture stuff that looks really cool and interesting, but as we go back and kind of review our evidence, you know, sometimes it is an investigator where, you know, someone says something or makes a noise, or I picked up the creepiest voice in Clark's in the one investigation we did, and it happened to be Larry. When I listened to it, it was like, "Hello," and I'm like, "Oh my God, what is that thing?" You know, and I listened to it over and over, and then I mentioned it at the investigation. Larry goes, "That was me." I'm like, "Why do you got to do that?"
Yeah, actually, I'll play it for you guys. I spent about 10 minutes watching that clip when I blew it up on the computer screen. I'm assuming it's Steve. It looked like the IR light reflecting off your leather jacket.
Right.
Because it's almost at the same time you moved.
I thought it was
you were barely
when,
in the frame, but then you'd moved slightly, and I think that was enough to make that IR shadow move the way it did.
Right.
So I'm writing that one off as being us, not paranormal, but...
I kind of thought it was
I'll
me when
you
showed
you guys
it to me down in the basement.
Get an opinion on it. But it happens that way. I mean, we forget in the dark that those IR flashlights that we don't see, they are actually a beam of light. I mean...
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
It doesn't look like it to us, but definitely an interesting place, though. I get some very weird feelings in there.
Is,
that's also one of these, that this should also serve as a reminder. When our clients took us on an interview, a walkthrough of the place, we were all upstairs. When we came back downstairs, there was a random person in the building. And the building was locked when we went in there. So now it's a matter of, where did this guy come from? What was he doing? Plus, we had thousands of dollars of equipment out that could have just literally been taken.
Absolutely. Walked right out the door.
That's something you always need to be aware of. Should always leave someone with the equipment. But
Well,
it was worth the look on everyone's face, like, where did this guy come from?
I mean, normally we do that for some reason, but I think that night we were all excited to be where we were, so we just sort of went on our way and just didn't think anything in equipment. I actually didn't, because I thought the front door was locked, and actually it was. So there was no entrance by anyone from the outside unless they had a key, and this person apparently had a key. But again, they could have wandered around and grabbed their stuff and thought nothing of it. Though they probably would have figured out what to do with half of it. What does a white noise EM meter do? You know, that kind of thing. So, as we're talking about that investigation and we're talking about evidence, there's a couple key new pieces of equipment that I actually used in that investigation. Three key pieces that I tried out during the EVP sessions, and it seemed to actually enhance my EVPs, where I was getting pretty much a lot of responses to questions. I was getting a lot of weird vibes and things like that, noises. But one of the pieces I use is called a white noise EM pump. Now, I know we use EM pumps on the investigation, and I have one of them, but this one's a little bit different. This one, when you turn it on, it actually generates white noise in EM form. So you don't actually hear the white noise. But if you put a K2 up next to it, you can get a EMF reading off of it. But it's actually generating white noise as EMF sign or waves. So that's to kind of help the room along with the EM pump. And another thing that I used is I had a second audio recorder. And on the second audio recorder, I put in what's called an ES speaker, which is an electromagnetic speaker. And what I did with this is I used a recorder. It was an app that I downloaded off of the Apple App Store. And essentially what I did is I recorded a message with, say, 10 questions with pauses in between each question, asking what is your name, did you die here, why you're here, things of that nature. And then I looped it. And then what I did is I plugged this electromagnetic speaker into it. It looks nothing more than just like a little rectangular box with a big ES painted on it. But essentially what this did is it generated that recording out electromagnetically. So you could not hear me talking. But if you held an K2 up to it, you could see the K2 pegging every time I would talk. And then I also had another audio recorder that had an EVP microphone attached. And what this is a passive microphone that you plug into like an iPod or an audio recorder. And essentially what it does is it will pick up audio signals that are transmitted electronically. So what happens is if we're doing an audio session and there's contamination by, you know, like Larry doing his voices or people talking or whatever, this will not pick up any outside audio. It will only pick up the audio in EMF form, which is really kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. And so to test this theory, what I did is I plugged this ES speaker into my iPod and I played an AC/DC song, Back in Black. So as it was playing, I could not hear the music. So I took the other audio recorder with the EVP mic and set it about 3 feet away and let the song play. And then I went back to the audio recorder and I played back the recording and I could hear the actual recording of AC/DC Back in Black, which was actually pretty bizarre. So the theory behind all this is essentially that sometimes spirits won't communicate with you audibly, but they'll communicate via like electronic frequency, like via EM or EMF. Mm-hmm. So the whole purpose of this is as I'm generating out these electromagnetic waves through the speaker, that maybe they can hear and understand those questions and then talk back at the same kind of electromagnetic frequencies back to the EVP mic, and it can pick that up and actually transfer it to voices.
That's interesting.
So it's kind of a wild concept, but I know they use these a lot. I've talked to a few prominent ghost hunters who said that mm-hmm. they've got some good results to it, so I thought I would put it to the test. And I actually picked up some EVPs with it.
Oh, awesome. I can't wait to hear it.
So more stuff that I need to carry around to investigation. But again, technology stuff is fascinating, and there's a lot of cool little devices out there that you can use. These products are actually manufactured by Digital Dowsing. And Digital Dowsing is the one that makes the Ovilus, which is a very controversial device. They also yes. make several other things, such as EM pumps. They also make different kinds of anomaly meters and stuff like that. So,
right.
So, yeah, it's definitely worth trying out, and it's definitely some of the newer technology that's being applied to investigations.
I think you have to go ahead and think outside the box sometimes. You got to give these things a try to see if it works. And if it works, fabulous. And if it don't, well, then you know it don't work, and you can put it away.
Well, exactly. But the thing is that there's technology out there that's being used. You see it on different television shows like Ghost Adventures. You read about it, that different groups out there are trying these different techniques. So, you know, they'd be cutting edge in the paranormal. It kind of behooves me not to purchase some of this equipment and try it out and give it a test and see what it does. So,
absolutely. You
know, so far, I mean, I've gotten a lot of EVPs from that particular location that we've investigated using these three different technologies.
And get ready, because you're going to be using that a lot more in the next few weeks.
Well, the one thing that we do get mainly when it comes to evidence is audio. Audio is usually the stuff that we usually get. I mean, everybody wants to see an apparition, specter, shadow person, whatever have you. But
oh, sure.
Normally it's audio evidence. So it's kind of crazy not to invest in some different technologies to capture that kind of audio evidence. Like the last investigation we did 2 weeks ago, we thought maybe we saw something on the shadow, but as Pete explained, he's probably going to end up dismissing that as actually the IR reflection off of your jacket. However, absolutely. We did grab 25, 30 EVPs, which is amazing.
That does seem king with us, EVPs and voice things. And we rarely, at least I have really never seen too many actual really good videos or clips from an investigation as of yet.
Right.
I haven't, but like I said, EVP seems to be king with us.
Well it's pretty much standard. If you look at the myriad of pictures that get posted each day on Facebook, audio is the way of going. I'm all for throwing away all of our video cameras and just going our audio.
I don't think we should throw away our video cameras. I think they're of good use, because you never know. There could be something someday we might catch with them.
And so it also helps when you're debunking to see if something else was happening somewhere else where you weren't.
Absolutely.
That actually caused it.
Yes.
Well, you know what, when it comes to video or audio,
Jen purchased, you know, our team is big proponents of Tascam products. She purchased an attachment for her iPhone, which was a double-barreled microphone that slips right into the data port of an iPhone. And she seemed to be getting good results with that in the field, too. So, I mean, if somebody out there doesn't want to or doesn't have the $100 or $200 to get a good quality Tascam, she seemed to do pretty good with the $20 attachment.
You know what? I've seen that, and it looks kind of sharp, too.
Yeah, but you know the only only problem with that is, I mean it's cost effective. I mean, I think she bought that double bar microphone for maybe $20-$30 when you get shipping involved. The only problem is then you download the Tascan app and put it on your phone because she uses like a an Apple product. I think it's an iPod Touch. And the only problem with that is when you use a Tascam recorder and you record with that plug-in microphone, it records well and the microphones are sensitive, but the issue with it is getting the data off of the iPod and getting it into, say, like a Windows-based computer so you can run it through Media Player and then or through Audacity. Because what happens when you use the Tascam app, it won't let you like attach that to an email. You got to go through SoundCloud, which is a second app you need to download onto your device. And SoundCloud is one of those music sharing kind of things where bands put up their music. And essentially what happens is you then got to open up a SoundCloud account and you can share it with other SoundCloud people. But it was difficult to get the evidence off of the device where you could just send it as an email, as a WAV file. That's the one thing that we discovered. And we had some issues trying to get that off of her recorder so that we could just run it through a normal Windows computer through Audacity and try to, you know, take out those sample clips and listen to them.
Did not know that, but that's good to know then.
Yes, it is.
But there are some other audio recorders that you can use on your iOS devices, like your Apple products. There's one called HT Recorder, which is a professional recorder. It's very sensitive. It lets you loop. You save the files in a library on your device, and it also saves them as WAV files, so you can transfer them into a computer. It lets you record at different speeds, but the best thing about it is that it lets you loop around. So this is the audio recorder that I used on my iOS device where I asked the questions and broadcast it at the location.
And being in the doctor's office this week, I will admit, waiting around, I typed in the word ghost in the app store, and I couldn't believe the amount of stuff that came up between ghost and paranormal. There was even a portable psychic, which I didn't download, but I could only imagine what that would consist of.
One could only think. But you know what, Pete? It's a great concept. To have all your paranormal investigation equipment on your cell phone. Come on, that's the best.
True.
You carry one thing around, and if one time you got a video audio recorder going on one app, you minimize it, you pull up another app, you have a ghost detector or a K2 meter. I mean, it's a great way to do it, but how many of those apps are actually legitimate?
I was just about to say that. How many of them are going to work? If they all worked, it'd be great. It'd be awesome just to carry your cell phone into an investigation instead of the boxes and things that we have to carry into an investigation. Just to carry your cell phone would be great.
Yeah, I will say, though, I did see a portable K2 that clips into the top of your iPhone.
Oh, they have
but
those.
But then you're thinking to yourself, the phone itself generates EMF. What are you really reading?
Exactly.
But again, it's purely eye candy and stuff to get people to just buy. We need to come up with something like that.
Well, how often have you guys used your K2s in investigations anymore?
You know what? I use mine still quite a bit, to be honest with you. It comes in handy at times. A lot of times it stays in my pocket until I need it. But, I still use mine.
Off and on, occasionally, yes. But, yeah,
so
mostly
on occasion
what we
do
is the audio. We just try getting EVPs.
Yep.
As far as me personally, but.
I try to focus on the audio. That's kind of the one thing that I try to specialize in, and I'm trying to get more equipment and some other audio detectors in order to do that. Maybe get a parabolic mic next, try that kind of stuff out. But since the audio is the most abundance of evidence that we gather, It's, and there's still a lot of other equipment that we could still try out. But the K2s in general, I mean, I still have my K2. When I do an investigation, I bring it with me. Well, I don't find myself pulling it out of my my little side pocket thing that I have my equipment in and using it much anymore. Because I'm either going to get nothing, or a lot of times when I pick up stuff, it's usually people's cell phones or Wi-Fi or, you know, some wire. However, it did come in really handy in a consultation that Steve sent us to about a month ago, where we went into an actual residence, and the homeowners were saying that their son was sleeping in the bedroom. You remember this case, Steve?
Yes, I do.
And that the child would wake up middle of the night and there would be a man standing in the room, and he'd get freaked out and always felt like he was being watched when he went to bed. He'd get out of bed. Sometimes he'd scream in the middle of the night, and they'd bring him out of the bed and put him in bed with the mother and father. And other times they would just wake up, and somehow he just kind of snuck in without them knowing. But as we went into the child's room, we pulled the K2s out, and they were pegging all the way to red. Now, that's a lot of EMF.
Yeah, it is.
What we discovered is that on the outside wall, not very far from the child's bed, was actually the incoming service panel for the power to the house. And when we put the K2s on the child's bed, the pillow, it was still going between orange and yellow. So the theory we had behind it is possibly is that the child is sensitive to the EMF in the room. So try moving the child's bed to a location that we found where we only got one green light, so the EMF was low. Or possibly move the child to a different room.
You know, I'm going to be calling these people back probably, if not this week, next week. And I'm going to ask them if they had moved the bed and what the results were for you guys that went on that consultation to see if it helped or not.
Well, the other interesting thing about that is when we try to do an audio session in that room, because, again, we wanted to do some other techniques other than just the K2 EMF testing.
Right.
All the audio sounded like we were, all I could think of was like we were bionic. You know, we sounded all like we were electronic in a room. It had a weird reverb to it and stuff. And when I talked to Pete about that, he suggested that's probably because of the high EMF in the room.
That I've never had that happen to me, but that sounds very interesting, yeah, Rich.
We've encountered that where it'll interpret the actual EMF into a sound and distort the entire audio track that's recording.
And that's there'll be a buzz
sometimes
too.
Sometimes you'll hear
there's
us say we lost the audio. That's what we're referring to.
Exactly. And there was a buzz that you couldn't hear with your ears, but if you ran the audio recorder and played it back, you hear a constant bzzz, which wasn't there and wasn't audible with human ears. And then, so based on that, we kind of made a determination that the first thing they should do is possibly move the child. So what I did is I went home and I decided to take my K2, and I know exactly where my service entrance is coming into my house. So I put the K2 right up to the wall on the outside of the cable, right where it goes in the box. And it only went up to like yellow. And as soon as I backed away like 2 inches, it went all the way back down to green. So now we were maybe 4 feet away, maybe 6 feet away, and it was still orange at this site. So I'm thinking possibly that there was a shielding issue with their service, with the wire coming into the house. Because they had it, when we went outside and took a look at where the service entrance came into to the meter, they had it down some weird channel on the side of the house that ran directly on the side of the child's room. And it was covered with either vinyl siding or aluminum siding, which is probably the weirdest thing I've ever seen, because normally it just gets tied in at the top of the house, then comes down in a shielded cable that you can touch and you're not going to get electrocuted. So that's something that definitely you may want to talk to them, Steve, when you call them back about.
Oh, absolutely.
So folks, you know, we don't always get paranormal stuff when we investigate.
I hate to say it, but I mean, a lot of people take for granted something as simple as electricity, and they don't realize the harm and danger that it really can cause, especially in old houses or houses where things have been doctored up with chop jobs. I mean, people doing whatever they can to save a buck without calling an electrician. They bypass switches. They run multiple lines off of lines. I mean, there have been many houses where we've maxed out the EMF reading with things people have done.
Well,
and people don't realize what that can actually do to them on a health level, especially like you're saying, that's orange 6 feet away from the wall. That's pretty much the entire room is hot.
Yeah, that's still a pretty high level. And then we found a bunch of cables. To me, they look like communication cables in the closet on the other side of the wall. But when we went in there and did our K2s, we weren't picking up anything from these cables. So I don't know if they had a satellite dish at one time, and they ran the cables down through the closet and just hung them there. But we suggested that they push the bed over to that wall, where pretty much we were not picking up any EMF on the K2s.
You know, with
and
that kind
was
of...
That one, there was that one very weird case, I don't know if you remember it, Rich, where the actual piano had an EMF charge. The old school piano.
No, I don't recall that one.
Well, maybe it was before you joined the team. I don't remember. It was several years ago. We actually did an investigation where the house was actually built around the piano. The piano was in the basement. And everywhere that you took an EMF reading, it was flat. But as soon as you'd put it on the piano, one of those old upright pianos with the foot pedals, it would go to orange, would go to red. It's not plugged in. But it was something we just couldn't explain.
Yeah, the EMF is, it's there, you know. And the K2s are a great piece of equipment to detect that. They're actually more, I think, lately becoming for me actually a debunking tool than anything else. I know that when we've done investigations before of the Halbert House, we've come across spirits, if you want to call them that, and we've actually had conversations where we've asked them yes and no questions, and they've set the K2s off to the yes questions, and the answer was yes. So we've had some good experience with them, but at the same time, you know, there's less and less of that, and it sounds more like we're getting to use these to kind of like seek out EMF, you know, problems in people's houses versus, you know, versus Wi-Fi or something versus actually any kind of spirits or anything like that. So, but it's definitely, I still highly recommend that you have it in your toolbox if you're going investigating, that a K2 is, and you can pick them up online, eBay, the ghost hunting stores. They're still an actually good place, piece of equipment.
And then there's the all-in-one, the Melmeter, which has the K2, the digital EMF, temperature. I probably am going to get in trouble for saying this, but I really wasn't impressed by that.
No, I wasn't either. There's one of the people in our group has one, and didn't do anything for me.
And I've seen them where they've had add-ons. They've put spirit boxes in it. They put the REM pod in it. They've put... why don't you put a microwave in it next? I mean, you can heat burritos up in the field. I know that's sarcastic, but... And it's a good chunk of money. Those are like $200.
Those are very expensive, yes.
Yeah, and to be quite honest with you, it's probably one piece of equipment that I probably will not buy to put in my toolkit. It's just, you know... It measures changes in temperature is one of the other things it does, but most of the time I can actually feel the difference in temperature happening. So I don't need to know the exact temperature that it is, to be honest with you. So, you know, again, it's just something that I think they're a lot of money and they're a great detection tool, but most of the time when we do investigations, I just don't kind of use those kind of things. And the Melmeter is an expensive one. I know Digital Dowsing makes an anomaly meter now, which is about $70-$80, which is, yeah, it's still expensive, but, and it's supposed to do a bunch of different things like the Melmeter. And it doesn't have that little antenna thing sticking out on it. So I may take a look at one of those and maybe upgrade my K2 to something like that if they really work.
I think that just goes back
to
saying
we've completely abandoned doing the temperature readings because, especially in weather like this, Like that last investigation, we kept saying, oh my God, the room's getting colder, the room's getting colder. And then we found the crack in the foundation, and we saw where the cold was coming from. So, I mean, that in itself could have been interpreted as, oops, something's happening. You feel exactly. It getting colder.
And it got cold there, too.
Well, you know, there's a lot of environmental things that we run into as well as, you know, paranormal, because these old locations always have something going on, so they tell the story.
I know I drive you guys crazy with the spirit box, but I'm not giving that up anytime soon. I think it's amazing.
I think that is a good tool. We get that
seem to be dead on. No pun intended.
Yeah, that's,
you know, like the little boy
saying,
falling down the elevator, falling. I mean, and that was the one reported death in the building, was somebody falling down the elevator shaft. I mean, what are the odds of that, seriously, that a radio is going to stop on that one word? I mean.
Exactly. And the thing is that there's no microphone. People are like, well, it's somebody responding back to you. Somebody hears your transmission. What transmission? There's no microphone on the device. It's just scanning at a quick pace FM and AM stations and looping. There's no, we're not saying anything. We're not broadcasting anything out to anybody. We're basically just listening to it. We're talking and listening to it, and it's giving us an answer. So I agree with Pete. I think the spirit boxes are a great tool for investigating, especially trying to get details, names, and stuff like that. And we've got a lot of great evidence out of that that's helped us gather more evidence based on the information that we acquired from these devices.
Oh, I agree. I agree. I think it's a great tool. I think it's one of our better tools.
A funny thing happened to me in church on Christmas Eve. This sort of goes along with what Rich is saying here. And someone recognized me. They're like, you're that paranormal guy, aren't you? I'm like, yes. He's like, you know, none of that stuff is real. I'm like, oh, it's not. I'm like, well, I beg to differ with you. But that's, you know, that's like there's a microphone. Somebody's answering you. If people want to believe in this, they're going to believe. If they don't, there's nothing you're going to do to make them believe until it happens to them.
I don't. Well, the thing is, my theory on it, my belief is that I don't need to prove this to anybody else. I just need to prove it to myself. And then the rest of it is just evidence that I share, and I let people make up their own minds to what they believe and what they think is real.
And that's all you can do.
Just quickly, guys, John Zappas shared with me something on Facebook called Ghosts of New England. And I'm looking at this on my iPhone here because I can't seem to find it on my Facebook page on my computer. But have you guys ever heard the Curse of Charles Island in Milford, Connecticut?
No, I haven't.
No, I haven't.
This is a small island. It kind of looks like Gilligan's Island as I'm looking at the photos here. it's off the coast of Connecticut, and it has actually a history of curses, buried pirate treasures, ghosts, and things like that. And it actually, during low tide, there's actually a land bridge, because there's a picture of it during high tide and a picture of it during low tide. And you can walk to this island off the shore during low tide. But, you know, if you get caught during high tide, there's no way you're going to make it back. You're going to have to spend the night on the island. And if you read through this article on here, it was acquired by the English back in 1639 when they overran an Indian tribe off the island. And the Indians basically cursed the English and put a curse on the island so that it would be haunted. And since then, so many different people bought this place. There was a monastery they tried to put on it back in, oh God, I think the 1700s. And then some pirates came through, and they believed they buried some treasure on it. But no matter what happened, no one ever seemed to stay on this place for very long. And now it's an abandoned island, and there's nothing but ruins and stuff on it. But people who go there say that they hear moans, and they hear groans, and they hear all kinds of voices, and they see strange lights and all kinds of stuff. It's really cool. I don't know if you guys are friends with John Zappas on Facebook, but he shared this link called Ghosts of New England, The Curse of Charles Island in Milford, Connecticut. You can actually find it on the web under Ghosts of New England, www.blogspot.com, and you can see pictures of the island and read the history of it. It's really cool.
Yes, looking at it right now, I don't know, the land bridge would kind of scare me.
And that's a long land bridge. That's did you see that?
Yeah.
That's a good walk. That's a good 10-minute walk to get out there on the land bridge. So,
yeah, it looks like it's well over 2 miles. I'm just guessing.
You think it's about 2 miles out?
From the photo, that's what I'm guessing, yeah.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to
be... I mean, it's still walkable, but Yeah, but I wouldn't really mess with anything with the Native Americans, you know?
No, I wouldn't either.
That's their own kind of haunting. I wouldn't even get involved in it.
Nope.
There's also a claim that there is a skeleton-like burning specter that chases people off the island, too, as well. That would almost be worth going just to get chased off of it by the specter, to be quite honest with you.
Unless it was high tide.
Yeah, well, I don't do shark infested waters and swimming, so it would have to be by a boat.
Well, gentlemen, I'm getting the one-minute warning here, so we blew through another show like nothing.
We did. The stripped-down version of Paranormal Investigator Radio with no soundtracks and no commercial breaks. Not that we were actually doing commercial breaks, but we went
It'll
all
be
through.
It'll be better next show, I promise.
Yeah. And for our listening
Both
audience,
and Steve
we apologize
to
for
tonight, so.
We're kind of all at different locations. Pete's on a phone line in, and Steve and I are on Skype. So if it sounds like sometimes we're talking over each other, it's because we don't actually hear each other talking at first. So technology is great, but it still possesses some challenges. So.
Yes, it does.
And on that note, I'd like to say thank you for tuning in.
Yes,
I'm Peter
you.
Leonard.
Richard Nickett, I'm signing off.
And Steve Roscoe.
We'll see you in 2 weeks. Have a good night.
Night, everybody.
Take care and God bless.
Warm.